Yeah, today's a very important day for me because it's Easter Sunday, the year 2000, and I started my ministry on Easter Sunday, the year 1989. So this would be my 32nd Easter service and my 31 years of ministry completed. And it's interesting to observe who I am at this stage of life, and that young man who stood up here 31 years ago, who was entirely different than who I am here today. I remember my first talk was about having your own resurrection, and I quoted Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind, and he took everything personally. Like, it's not about something that happened 2,000 years ago, about a man dying on a cross and physically resurrecting. No, it's about having your own resurrection and asking yourself, who am I after 31 years of ministry? Could I die to the old idea of David? And we, you know, go through so many dynamics of death and rebirth throughout a long-lived life. When we were a child, we thought as a child, and then we went into our adolescence, and we maybe were rebellious, and then we went into young adulthood, and we bought this world idea that we had to become a somebody in order to be acceptable to anybody, until, of course, we couldn't get the world's approval, and so if we were fortunate, we had several crucifixions along the way. But I remember Marianne Williams said, for those people who live on the cross, she said, it's time to get down from the cross. We need the wood. And if you could make a little bit of a snicker around that, are you perpetually crucifying yourself, or have you found that there is this life that wants to emerge from within? Now, with this coronavirus on the planet, it's almost like a wake-up call. Because when you know that death could be imminent for any one of us, there's an equal playing field on this planet, then how are we living our lives? Are we living them cautiously and mindfully, or are we living them flippantly and devil may care? It's very sacred times to ask that simple question, who am I being at this time? Yesterday, last night, when Trey was making dinner, I went to watch a little television after working on the sermon. And they had two movies on. One was Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston, and I've seen it a zillion times, with the chariot race and all that sort of stuff. And the other was The Wizard of Oz. And I opted to go for the latter because I may have done ministry for 31 years, but I have watched that movie for 60 years or so. I mean, I remember as a little boy. And it's the classic myth that we all live. It's the myth of the prodigal son. And it's the myth of leaving your family and going off to the far country, as the prodigal son did. And when he hit bottom, in the parable that Jesus spoke about, it says, and he came to himself. He woke up. And when he woke up, he went back to the father. And the father killed the fatted calf, and he put sandals on his feet and a new robe, and he had a great party for the young man. So it was the resurrection story in metaphor. And Dorothy, you might say, is the same thing. So as Trey was making dinner, I watched the movie, and my favorite part was at the very, very end. And after all our searching and after all our striving, and after killing the Wicked Witch of the West and dissolving her with a bucket of water and carrying the broom back to the great and powerful Oz, they discovered that what they thought was a great and powerful Oz was just a man behind a curtain. You know, so many people have that kind of God. This Jehovah that likes some and disfavors others, and if you do the right thing, maybe you'll be saved. And so they found out that he wasn't real, that what they thought was the great and powerful Oz was just a man like everybody else. And so the irony was, the message that is so eternal, and after seeing it last night, I heard it so clearly, and I'm so glad our children hear this message, that the scarecrow, he wanted a brain, the title of Tadok's The Great Opening, all of a sudden, once they exposed the wizard for what he was, a charlatan, all of a sudden the big pink orb comes down from the sky, and we know that that was Glinda, the Good Witch of the North. And the orb flew, and there's Glinda with her little magic wand and her little crown and her silver dress. And she says to them, to the scarecrow, she says, you know, you wanted a brain. She says, and so many people out there have a brain, including some that I won't mention, and they speak an awful lot, and they have no more brain than you do. But what they do have is a diploma. So she says, I hereby give you a degree in thinkology. So she handed him the diploma. In other words, you have the brains that you've been seeking all along. And then she turns to the Tin Man, and he's crying. And he says, I wanted a heart, and I must have a heart because my heart is breaking. And she said to the Tin Man, she said, it's very important to know that the heart is not how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others. And so she gave him this big red heart to put on his tin outfit, and so he was exonerated. You've had the heart all along. And then was the Cowardly Lion. He's sniffling away Bert Lahr. And she said to him, you exampled so much vulnerability, and in meeting your vulnerability, you found the courage that was there all along. You know, Brené Brown has this beautiful global ministry, and it's all based on having the courage to be who you are, and you can't find courage until you first meet vulnerability. So she's telling the lion, through your vulnerability, you discovered a courage that was there all along. Huh. Well, then they all three say, well, what about Dorothy? What about Dorothy? And she says, oh, you don't have anything in your bag of tricks for me. And Glenda said in her wisdom, as that abiding space of the Buddha consciousness, she said, you had within you the power to go back all along. I did. And they said, well, why didn't you tell her that? And then Glenda said, because you wouldn't have believed me. You had to discover it for yourself. And so the three men said, what have you discovered, Dorothy? And little Judy Garland, a 16-year-old at the time, said, well, I discovered if I ever go looking for my heart's desire to look no further than my own backyard, because if it isn't there, well, I never lost it to begin with. And then she turns to Glenda, is that it?
That's it, she said, that's it.
So what if the thing we're looking for is looking through us? That's what Ernest Holmes says. The thing you're looking for, you're looking with. So courage is looking for courage. And wisdom is looking through the intellect, you know, thinking it's got to have concepts and ideas, when in truth it has to enter the mystery of not knowing. And the heart just has to open. And so listening to The Wizard of Oz again after so many years, I realize how long are we going to have to give the world a message that what you are looking for already is there. And so in the midst of a world that seems to be looking for peace and harmony, we first have to find it within ourselves. And that's the message that I hear over and over again. And when you find it in there and you realize it was there all along, and the more of us that do it, the more the planet awakens to this essential part of our true nature. And that's the invitation. Every Saturday night, I seek inspiration from various sources, you know, outer teachers, Ajahn Shanti sometimes, when he says his advice is to go to the center of the storm, the center of the cyclone. And lately I've been listening to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is speaking to over 20,000 people on live streaming. And then you can go on YouTube and just type his name in, and so many more like myself are watching him. And he does something every day, Monday through Friday, an hour-long session. And I was talking to Michael. He starts off by just sitting there for maybe 20 minutes of meditation. And then when he comes out of the meditation, he says, the very fact that you are joining me shows that you are ready for the great opening, to meet with me in that opening, in that spacious, mindful awareness that is not reactive, that is not caught up in a narrative, even though we are in very, very troubled times right now. And so he shares from his heart how we can learn to navigate troubled times by letting our default system not be the freaking out reactive self, but our default system is we go home. We go to that peaceful place. You know, there's storms here in Huntsville, Alabama, and this afternoon for like maybe 5 hours, there's going to be thunderstorms, possibility of tornadoes, and I have an old dog, Bert, who gets just terrified. And I'm grateful it's not in the middle of the night, because when he does it, it keeps me up half the night holding him. So I anticipate this afternoon, when I leave here, I'll go home and I'll put his thunder shirt on. And when the storms will arise, I will be lying down next to him, holding him in my arms, being that holding space of peace and calm, knowing that I can't change his experience, but I can offer him mine. I can offer him my heart. You know, in my wedding vows, the very opening is, with this ring, I give you my heart. I have no greater gift to give. May my heart be your shelter. May my arms be your home. May my smile bring you joy. Anyway, I'm getting all verklempt just thinking about the wedding vows. What if we're here to marry ourself, to marry the self within the self, to become committed and to honor that? So at the end of the Jon Kabat-Zinn series, he opens it up to questions. And the first one that called was a lady from China. And she's been struggling with, she's been on every day with him. And then she says, but when I go back to the real world, I don't know how to keep that same level of openness and spaciousness because I tend to feed off of the trauma and the news and all this sort of stuff. And he said to her, he said, you know, you're thinking too much. You're making it too duplicitous. There's the you that lives in the world, and then there's the you that sits down and gets still. What if you start to integrate those two? That instead of thinking that I've got a separate reality, which I'm calling the real world with a little r, and then there's this peaceful reality, what if they commingle? So in the midst of chaos and confusion, you know, when you come to a stoplight, instead of freaking out, say, here's a time to do some deep breaths and to center myself. And to have little rest spots throughout the day, he said to her. So that was interesting. The next man that called was from Egypt. And he shared with Jon Kabat-Zinn, my struggle is that I have a commentator in my head who never stops talking. And he said, my personality tends to be neurotic. And so he said, I need this calm that you offer us every day, and I'm so grateful that you offer it. But when your nature that you know is kind of neurotic, and that you have this voice in your head that never stops talking, that never stops commenting, do you have any suggestion for me? And Jon Kabat-Zinn, in his gentle wisdom, said, stop fighting with the commentator. He says, the commentator wants to be heard. So what if you listen to him and say, okay, what are you really trying to tell me? And if you hear the commentator, you can say, thank you for sharing. I understand you're afraid. These are confusing times. But I'm here right with you, just like I'm going to do with Bert this afternoon. I know you're afraid. And he said, if you fight the commentator, if you resist it, he's going to get even stronger. And then you're going to have a war raging within yourself. You're going to have two identities, the peaceful you and then the one that comments on everything. So he said, I hope you can hear that. But the one that moved me the most was the last person that called in. And she was a young woman from Paris, France. And her name was Isabella. And she spoke with that lovely French accent. And she is on day 8 of the coronavirus. And she's isolated by herself. And she was sitting in front of the TV screen. And she was sharing how her heart was completely shut down. She said, my heart isn't open. And she says, I'm going through feelings of guilt. Like, why am I alive and so many are dead? And it's very hard to breathe. And she went on and on. And finally, he said in his gentle way, he said, would you stop shaming yourself? It's enough that you're going through the coronavirus. You don't have to beat up on yourself. You're doing the best you can. And he says, what I see is a beautiful woman who's whole and perfect at her center. And that's the truth of who you are. And he says, when you say that your heart is closed, that's just a thought. And he says, I don't see a closed heart. And he said to her, Isabella, he says, there's 20,000 people right now watching you and holding you in their hearts. Could you receive the love that's being transmitted heart to heart? And here's a man who probably doesn't know anything about spiritual mind treatment, and that was one of the most beautiful treatments that he gave. And she, in her strange sort of way, by sharing her vulnerability, just like the cowardly lion, showed us the courage to embrace that vulnerability, because we're not alone. We're all connected to one another. So it's so funny that life will give you these beautiful messages if you just take time to stop and look within and listen to the teacher within. A young friend of mine, he goes to the center, and he texted me and he said, I'm finding solace in listening to Eckhart Tolle. He is a teacher that really speaks to me right now. And so we spoke later that afternoon, and I said, well, he's your teacher for now. But always remember that the teacher out there is pointing you to the teacher within yourself. And then the greatest teacher is life. So there'll be many, many, many teachers out there. And hopefully they're awakening something within you that is ready to awaken. So I went through some of my teachers on the outside that awaken things on the inside. And the first one I want to share with you is John O'Donohue. He's a beautiful man. He died at 52, suddenly, of a heart attack. He's a mystic. He came out of the Irish tradition. I love to listen to him speak. And there's a book that was written, and this theme for the month of April is Walking in Wonder, based on a little book by John O'Donohue called Walking in Wonder. And these were interviews that he did in Ireland, and someone put them in a book version, and it's just so nice to hear his words again. But his teacher, that the outer teacher wasn't Eckhart Tolle, even though he loves Eckhart Tolle. His teacher was a man named Meister Eckhart in the 13th century. Meister Eckhart would say things like, the only begotten is ever begetting himself in me. He was later called a heretic by the church. He would say something like, you have to have your own resurrection too. It's not about Jesus, it's about, is this Christ resurrecting in you? And so this is what John O'Donohue says in this lovely little book. He says, one of the most beautiful things in Meister Eckhart's teachings is the idea of just letting things be as they are. He says, so many people wonder what they should do and how they should work. But for Meister Eckhart, none of that really matters. The most important thing to focus on is, how am I being right now? You know, last week, what mother called in to Jon Kabat-Zinn and said, what should I do with my children during the time of the coronavirus? And he says, madam, you know it's more important who you are than what you do. If you can be a loving, calm presence for your children, that says volumes. Maybe go for a walk with the dog. We take Humphrey for rides in the neighborhood in a stroller since he had the herniated disc and he's still learning how to walk. So Bert prances on one side and Humphrey sits in his stroller. And I'm getting so many smiles from the neighborhood. And so the other day, the neighbor that lives down the street, their 7-year-old son, I saw him sitting in the stroller and he had a big sheet over his head. And his mom and dad said, well, once he saw the pug in the stroller, he wanted to go riding around the neighborhood in the stroller. So now he's going around the neighborhood. You see how we contagion each other? A little bit of fun. So how are you being? He said. This is really mindfulness of presence. All intimacy, love, belonging, creativity is not when your grubby little hands out of our functional minds get into the mystery, but rather it's when we stand back and let the mystery of life be and stand in awe of it. I've shared with you that on the front porch, we have a robin family nesting in one of the flower pots. And on the back patio, in a big bush with thorns and everything, there's another robin family nesting with their little chicks. And now mom and dad are flying back and forth, giving them little food. And they're teaching me such beautiful caring for the least of these. I hope the storm doesn't affect them. Anyway, she says, let the mystery be and become enveloped in it so that it extends us and deepens us. Could we be deepened by this experience? Not let us make us bitter, but let it make us better. I think that humanity is going to really open its hearts after this thing is over. I really sense that. Finally, Meister Eckhart has this lovely idea, a Gelassenheit. It's a German word. Gelassen, he says, is the German word for calmness. And he says, even when things go against you and the rhythm of your life takes you to awkward and lonely places, you can still maintain that stillness, that Gelassenheit, which is in your soul and will connect you and give you an inviolable sense of belonging and togetherness. Don't you kind of feel that we're connected all over the planet right now? When I watched that video thing with 120 countries, Egypt and Paris and China, they're all coming together in stillness, in the calmness, to claim that as their reality. He says, you won't get that from a program, but you can awaken it in your own heart. In your own heart. Yeah, to connect in your own heart. So John O'Donohue, his last real book that he wrote was called his Book of Blessings. And I think one of the most beautiful blessing he wrote was the blessing for presence. And the presence is the opening, is that thing that we all share. It's not mine, it's not yours. It's what's ours, this presence. It's in Bert, it's in the robins, it's in the trees, it's in the planet, this awake, aware, loving presence. And so here's his blessing for you and me on this presence, and I'm going to share it and invite you to take it for yourself. He says, then awaken then to the mystery of simply being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Close your eyes and feel that. Enter that dimensionless, quiet, still immensity of your own presence. And here, he says, have joy and peace now in the temple of your senses. Jon Kabat-Zinn invited us to enter into the sense of hearing, not with a narrative and a thought about it, but just hearing the sound of the rain. Knowing that suddenly the rain that falls has a meaning, the sound of the birds singing outside, not trying to differentiate, is that a cardinal or a robin? But what if it's the song of life? And so when we enter into the hearing, into the senses, we can find a joy and a peace there. He says, receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon. Behold, the Bible says, I make all things new. So what if in this coronavirus we're discovering a new way to navigate through life? I was speaking to my beloved Lisa Ferraro today, and we were talking about how ministry maybe has to be on Zoom from now. We get virtual ministry. Imagine 20,000 people are listening to Jon Kabat-Zinn live every day. It's certainly not just one beautiful Michael in the back of the room. He then says, so receive encouragement when these new frontiers beckon. Next, he says, respond to the call of your gift and the courage to follow its path. Well, there's the question again. What is your gift? Could we respond to the call of our gift? I heard my gift say, God, I'm a dancer, and a dancer dances. But it's the dance of life. So could we have the courage then to follow this path, even though the world says, oh, that's impractical? He says, then let the flame of anger free you of all falsity. The flame of fear, the flame of anxiety. Oh, there you are, my little anger. Oh, there you are, my little fear. Oh, there you are, little anxiety. And you're not real. You're just something that is arising to scare me. Let the flame of it free you. Next, he says, may the warmth of your heart keep your presence aflame. I know for me that the call of my ministry came through the heart. It wasn't through the brilliant intellect, even though that's a very wonderful tool. It came through that compassionate heart that says we're all connected in this heart space. So may the warmth of this heart keep this presence aflame, and may anxiety never linger long about you. It will come, but it doesn't need to stay. Yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of our fears and doubts, we don't build a condo there, he says. No, I said that. May your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of the soul. So may this beautiful presence that we all come together in the oversoul be reflected in how we are in the world. Take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Every spring, when the plants start to leaf out and the flowers are blooming, I'm in awe. Oh, it came back. Oh, it came back. You know, the quiet miracle of life returning. Be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul. And may you finally experience each moment as a sacred gift woven around your own heart of wonder. Each moment is sacred, and it's woven around a heart that stands in awe of all that is. Huh. So that's the first blessing. That's the first teacher that is the invitation in this experience called walking in wonder. Could we open to that which is showing itself as peace and calm incarnate, even when we're not? So to take communion with a tree or a rock, or to sit in a silent room and befriend the silence. The room is silent. Could I find the silence within myself as well? So everything points to something. And could we look to what it's pointing toward? And when the thoughts arise, like that young man said he had the commentator, could we recognize that we are observing the commentator? And there's enough room for him to be in there. There's enough room for fear to be in there. There's enough room for a blocked heart to be in there. And once the blocked heart is held, it begins to open. Because we're all a work in progress. We're all evolving into what Barbara Marx Hubbard calls the homo universalis, the universal human, the awakened human. And you know, it's important that we stay awake to that presence. Every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, we're doing a class, and it's a wonderful class. It's on Zoom. If you should choose to take it, you can email Jody Rutenberg. Her email, lowercase, is jodi.rutenberg@yahoo.com. And you can join the class at any time. We just finished our second class. We're going to be starting our third this week. It's about a 10-week class. And it's on a wonderful book called The Joy of True Meditation by Jeff Foster. And Jeff Foster, he speaks empirically. Empirically means from his own direct life experience, from someone who was very frightened and very depressed and a real mess, to someone only in meeting his depressed, frightened, messy self, he found freedom. Not by becoming the whole person that he was inherently, like Isabella was in Paris, but by paradoxically meeting that part of him that was in crisis. And when we meet the part that's in crisis with love, it has a way of letting go of us, because it's no longer being resisted, it's no longer being exiled. And so in this great opening, it's important that we open to the all of us. I'm going to give you a little taste of what he's like. This is what the book looks like, The Joy of True Meditation. And this is the beginning of next week's class, the very first little, he does little reflections. And this is about when your life has fallen apart, how you're supposed to be. I thought it was appropriate with the coronavirus and what people are going through right now. It's called From the Rupture and Then the Repair. You might think of it as a crucifixion and a resurrection. From the rupture, which is everything falling apart, to then the repair. And this is what he says. When our plans and our dreams fall apart, ask yourself what doesn't fall apart. Huh. He said, first there is a rupture. The status quo is shattered. The old safety is gone, and we definitely feel that now. Old wounds have been triggered within us. The pain body resurfaces. Buried trauma begins to erupt from the depths of our own unconscious, and you feel disoriented, groundless, homeless, not knowing where you're relevant for today, doesn't it? He says, you encounter the strange space of now. Oh my God, I've been saying to people, I feel like I've stepped into the Twilight Zone. I hear Rod Serling's voice in the back of my head. You are now entering the Twilight Zone. Everybody is looking at you, but no one's touching. They have masks on their faces. You encounter the strange space of now, pure presence, raw, unprotected by old dreams, nothing to cling to now. Even your outdated concept of God seems to be crumbling. And then, very simply, you remember to just breathe. Boy, what an anchor that is. And you could ask yourself, what is breathing you? You know, could we fall back into the breath and trust the breath? It's always there. It never abandons us. He says, and you return to the safety of the present moment, and you feel your feet on the ground again, and you feel the weight of your body again, and you observe, that's the key word, the madness of your own mind, rather than losing yourself in the mind. And you watch your thoughts spinning out of control. But you, as awareness itself, are not spinning out of control. The world may feel out of control, but you are not. You are not the ever-changing mind, all capital letters. Rather, you are the unchanging observer of all of that. And this realization changes everything. Oh my God, I'm not my thoughts. I don't have to believe my thoughts, those scary thoughts. They're just thoughts. They arise. And you feel what you feel now. Sometimes you're afraid. Maybe you're angry. Maybe you feel numb and paralyzed or sad and lonely. Maybe you feel unsafe. Whatever, you commit to feeling it fully right now, to not running away from it. A feeling is just a feeling. It's a flowing energy. It's not a solid fact. And presence can hold it as it flows. You wail, perhaps. You weep. You scream. But you are repairing. Huh. You have broken in order to heal. There's the crucifixion and the resurrection. You have ruptured to mend. And old energies have merged only to be blessed by love. By love and acceptance, tenderness, today, right now. And there is only today. And there's only right now. So he goes on to say, you only have to deal with life one moment at a time. Please never forget this. One moment at a time. I remember there was years ago, I think 40 years ago, I stopped cigarette smoking. It was the one thing I was addicted to. And I went to the Baptist hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, and everybody there had to stop smoking. I was 30 years old. They had lung cancer. I didn't. And so it was imperative for them. For me, it was just a nasty habit. And I remember one of these gentlemen saying to me, I learned that the urge to have a cigarette lasts 22 seconds. He says, all I have to do is make it through those 22 seconds. And you know, that's the thing that helped me get over that addictive thing. When the urge would come, I would say, I've got 22 seconds to meet this urge, and then it would fall away. I'm very grateful to say there's no urge left for a cigarette. What a beautiful accomplishment. So, but once you've done it, you know you can do it. And he says, you can't go back to the way things were. You can't unsee what you have already seen, but you can be present right now. And you can take each step consciously now, not automatically, habitually, but mindfully and with care, finding gratitude for each extra moment that you are alive. You know, Meister Eckhart said, when you know you're close to death, it makes the imperative of life even sweeter. So he says, yeah, finding gratitude for each extra moment that you're alive, thanking the air that we breathe. You know, when we walk around with the dogs, I love to take deep breaths of air and feel I don't have to be afraid to breathe this beautiful, sweet air. Be thankful for the rain that makes the flowers grow. Be thankful for the vastness of the sky. And even though there are storm clouds in the sky, I can know myself as this vast, spacious sky, and storm clouds can come what may. He says, thanking your feet and your legs and your spine that keep you standing, and thanking the arms for all they hold and carry, and thanking your heart for what it endures day by day, and thanking your shoulders and your brain and your lungs and your muscles and all those internal organs full of unspeakable mysteries. You notice how he's moving into a consciousness of gratitude instead of, oh, poor me? And so this is part of the healing. Finally, staying close to yourself now as your old world falls apart, walking this new and unknown path with trust and courage, slowly, mindfully, with care, stepping into this new life one step at a time, repairing your world with each step, becoming familiar with the sacred moments. Wow. So each of these writers is pointing toward a way to meet the challenges of life one moment at a time, not by running away from the obstacles, the challenges, the anxieties, the fears, but paradoxically by opening to them, by holding them, by not making them wrong. And each one of us has to discover this for ourselves, just like Dorothy had to make that discovery. And however long we have to stay in the delusional world of Oz, is up to you and up to me, until finally, hopefully, that 2x4 will say your way isn't working anymore, and it's time to shift your approach, instead of making it the enemy wrong to love the enemy. You know, I think at this time of year when we're honoring the resurrection of Jesus, it's important to really realize what the man was talking about, what he was saying. And the older and the more evolved I got, I realized he spoke in paradox. And people couldn't really understand him. Like he would say, do good to those that harm you. Huh? He'd say, why look for a splinter in your brother's eye when there's a beam in your own? He says, first take the beam out of your own eye. In other words, learn to see clearly before you want to take on the world and say what their problem is. But one of his most paradoxical statements was to love your enemy. And what he was acknowledging there, if you use the question as a lantern, like John O'Donohue would say, what does he mean by loving the enemy? Well, oftentimes the enemy is our own exiled self that we projected out into the world. And so we'll call the neighbor the enemy, when the neighbor is just a reflection of our own inner part that we haven't healed. So he was really sharing with, could we love that part of us that deep down has been exiled, we've called wrong, sinful? And once that part of us, that angry, fearful, critical self has been listened to, its narrative has been listened to, the commentator in the head, and thank you for sharing, well, then it feels embraced and heard, and it no longer has to sabotage you with you did it wrong or you should have done this way. You know, I could have done it that way, and thank you for sharing. I chose to live the way I'm living, not necessarily the way the inner critic wants to live. And so then you've made space for that inner critic. He doesn't have to be your tyrant. He can be your ally, your buddy. Oh, there you are. I remember my friend Helen Street. She always would give me a chuckle. And she'd say, when I leave church, she was a minister in Honolulu, she would say, she said, usually it happens at night where the inner critics would all arise. She called them the committee. And they would say, you should have done it this way, you should have done it that way. And she said, I'd wake up from a nightmare like, oh my God, every critic in the world was living in my head. And she says, one day I left my office in Honolulu and I was riding home and there was the head of the critics right there in my own car. She said, I called her the bitch. And she was really reading my beads, telling me I'm not even worthy of being a minister. And she says, when I got out of the car, I parked it in the parking lot and I took her by the throat. This is all metaphorical. And she said, I went her up to my apartment and I sat her down and I said, listen, I know that you really mean well trying to help me in all this. And I thank you for your good efforts in being the critic. And she said, she says, once that part of me was met and it became less of an enemy and more, oh, there she is again, trying to help me out by telling me what I should do, what's appropriate. And so I think it's a whole different way of approaching life, not as an adversarial way, but in a way as an embracing, compassionate way. Last but not least, the outer teacher that takes me to the inner teacher and who really inspired the title of today's talk from a poem that he wrote. He wrote a poem called The Great Opening. And it's a poem that was written after he'd had a dream, a numinous dream, a dream that awoke him to a deeper healing. And he called the poem The Great Opening. And in the poem, it's all abstract. He talks about a young man who's a warrior, a soldier, and who commits crimes, probably murder. And this is a dream thing. And the young soldier starts to cry out to the universe, help me, why? And with that, the young soldier finds that he's standing on a bridge. And he's standing on the bridge with his perceived enemies and all his challenges. Remember, this is a metaphor. He's on a bridge and he's crying out to God. And then all of a sudden, the universe starts to shower him with flower petals. And the flower petals start to heal all the different parts of himself. And so I'm going to read this poem first, and then I'll read it a second time. And then we're going to play a song about building bridges of peace, not walls to keep us bound from one another, but really, and then invite a direct revelation of the great opening through a guided meditation. At least that's my intention. We'll see how it works. So this is his beautiful little poem called The Great Opening. He said it was the son of a soldier who killed his own people. It was that gentle son who went in despair finally to his grandfather's bridge, and he asked in his painful cry, why? And that night he dreamt that everyone who had been hurt and everyone who'd done the hurting, they all met on that bridge, and in their awkwardness and pain, it began to rain flowers, which grazing their skin opened their faces, and they were healed. And the flowers, falling into the water, brought the fish who thought the petals were food, and the son of the soldier awoke, committed to the building of bridges and to the food of flowers raining from the sky. I'll read it one more time, and then Michael will put on this beautiful song. It's called The Great Opening. It was the son of a soldier who killed his own people. It was that gentle son who went in despair to his grandfather's bridge to ask in his plaintive cry, why? And that night he dreamt that everyone who had been hurt and everyone who had done the hurting met on that bridge. And in their awkwardness and pain, it began to rain flowers, which grazing their skin opened their faces, and they were healed. And the flowers, falling into the water, brought the fish who thought the petals were food. And the son of the soldier awoke, committed to the building of bridges, healing bridges, and to the food of flowers, raining from the sky to nurture the soul.